There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Okey-dokey, we're broadcasting live from Barasti where the game is always on. We're up here on the rooftop garden. You're listening to The Grill with you through till 7 o'clock this evening. Premier League is underway. Man City leading Burnley in the first half. 41 minutes gone on that one. City against Burnley is 1-0 to the visitors at the moment. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. Killy against Celtic up in the Scottish League and Ibra against Sevilla over in Spain. We're also getting ready for, and certainly Barasti are getting ready for, the 2018 Six Nations. And it promises to be a cracker. So plenty to look forward to over the next couple of weeks. What's coming up tonight? Mark Archer.
Yeah, it's the first round, the first three matches of this year's Six Nations Championship. In a little over an hour, Tom, will be the first match taking place in Cardiff. Wales are at home to Scotland. Late kickoff this evening, 8:45 UAE times in Paris. France hosting Ireland. And then tomorrow in Rome, Italy will face England. England, of course, back-to-back winners and aiming to become the first nation in 135 years to win the title outright for three consecutive years.
We'll have team news for you in just a few moments' time. As I said, it's the first weekend of the Six Nations 2018, which should all, hopefully, if things go according to plan, culminate down at Twickenham, England against Ireland in a possible decider. If you'd like to be there, stay tuned, because Chris McCarty's got the details. Chris?
I do indeed, Tom. Yes, very good afternoon down here at this little Area 22 setup, a chance for you to win an all-expenses-paid trip to England, Ireland, Twickenham, St Patrick's Day weekend. And I'm delighted to be joined by Jamie Ward from Dubai Exiles, because he's popped on down here with a few of his mates. 2 minutes is the time that you've got to get as many points as you possibly can in this little passing challenge. Now, Jamie, I was watching you. It's going to be stuck up on our social media. Impressive stuff from the Dubai Exiles. How many points?
640, I think it was in the end. Yeah.
640 points. Let me just paint the scene for you as well. There are five little holes in this little challenge down here. A couple of holes worth 40 points, 20 points for the one in the middle, and 10 points for the ones on bottom. You guys absolutely smashed it. 640 points. Confident of heading to Twickenham?
Well, you don't know yet. We started pretty slow, actually, and then really got into our stride towards the second minute. But yeah, no, looking forward to it if we can get there, but I think there's still a final to go.
And listening to that accent as well, you're obviously a proud Englishman. Your chances of Six Nations success?
I think we're probably not favourites going into the tournament. I think Ireland probably are the favourites. We've got a few injuries, particularly missing Billy Vunipola, which, you know, a guy that can carry 100 yards a game easily is going to be a big miss. So, chance for some young lads to set up in Sam Simmons from Exeter. But, you know, we'll wait for this England-Ireland, hopefully be the decider.
What about Dubai Exiles as well? A club steeped in history in this part of the world. How's it all going for the Exiles, and how's it going for yourself, Jamie?
Well, we actually had a good win yesterday over the Jebel Ali Dragons, which I think with the Harlequins not playing puts us top of the table. So a very big win. It's all in our own hands. If we perform on the day, you know, win the games, then we can win the league. So that's it. I think we're going to Bahrain on the 16th. We've got the Dragons again next week. So a lot of rugby to be played still, but good so far, yeah.
And please tell me as well that the boss knows that you might not be playing come March 17th, because with a score of 640, there's a good chance that you'll definitely be in the final. You could, well, who knows, you could be off to Twickenham. So does the manager, does the coaching staff, do they know that you might not be available March 17th?
Well, I don't know yet, you know. As I say, we take each week as it comes, you know. In a league where, you know, games are decided on 3 or 4 points, very tight all the time. So, you know, we set up for next week and we go again. If it comes to March 16th, we're at Twickenham, we're at Twickenham, you know?
Well, listen, that is the voice of Jamie Ward. Those boys, Jamie and his teammates, Dubai XLs, they have set the score to beat Tom, 640 points down here at Area 22. It's open for the next hour. If you are popping on down to Barasti, buy yourselves a couple of jars of Ireland's finest. That's all I'll say on that matter. And you could have a chance of beating that score of 640. Back to you.
Very diplomatic of you. We will be getting more of McCarty's offloads a little later on in proceedings. Mark Archer's working through the teams for us for the first game of this year's RBS Six Nations.
Yeah, of course, it just gets underway in an hour's time in Cardiff. Wales at home to Scotland. It's Warren Gatland, fresh from a great campaign with the British and Irish Lions down in New Zealand. He comes back with his coaching credentials well established. He's taking on Gregor Townsend, who is continuing the job he picked up recently. The matches in Cardiff, both teams, Tom, have some injury issues, though, like all the teams seem to have in this year's Six Nations. Let's start with Wales. Their team contains a record 10 players from Scarlets, which is a pretty amazing fact there. It's winger Josh Adams, he makes his debut. The second row, Corey Hill, will make his first Six Nations start. And Ross Moriarty returns at number 8 after some lengthy back issues. Wales, though, they've won 8 consecutive home wins versus Scotland, but they had a pretty poor time around of it last year's Six Nations Championship. They finished 5th. So disappointing for Warren Gatland coming back into the job. Injury issues we talked about. This is the list of the casualties, Tom, for Wales. Sam Warburton, Jonathan Davis, Reece Webb, Toby Faletau, Dan Bigger, Dan Lydiate. That's the heart and soul of that Welsh team. But this is what Warren Gatland had to say in the build-up to this match against Scotland for this week, this start of the Six Nations.
I think he's had a good season. I think a couple of games at fullback as well. I think he's started 11 out of the 14 games at 10. But in fairness, both him and Gareth have trained really well the last couple of weeks, and it was a healthy discussion about the options at 10, and both of them have put their hand up, and we're pleased with the way that they're going. And as you said, the possibility that we looked at combinations and guys being familiar with combinations, and in terms of that 9-10 midfield options, and also in particular the front row as well, sort of been. That familiarity is important. It fast tracks us a little bit in terms of preparation, and hopefully gets us off to a good start in the Six Nations.
I worry about Wales in the Six Nations. I know they've got huge strength and depth, and I know they've got a lot of talent coming through the ranks, but they really are going to have to step up at this one.
Big injury worries. I think the good thing for Wales and Warren Gatland is Scarlets are banging form, and he's picked 10 Scarlets players. So there'll be some combinations there. They'll know each other week in, week out from their club play, and hopefully those guys can come to the fore. Wales have injury problems, but Scotland also have their injury problems, particularly in the front row. They're missing 5 props and 3 hookers. So if you're a proper hooker or front row in Scotland, you might get a game this weekend because they are crying out with some injury issues in the front row there. What Gregor Townsend's done, his selection, he's given the centre Chris Harris his first start. Ali Price is preferred to Greg Lainlaw at scrum half, which is a bit of a surprising move. But the front row, of course, is Gordon Reid, Stuart McAnally and John Welsh. I don't know those players from anywhere, Tom. So he's picked them out somewhere, and he's obviously got those injury issues with those 5 props. Scotland have never won an opening Six Nations fixture away from home. They've lost all 9, so that doesn't bode well. Key men for Scotland, of course, Stuart Hogg, who's been in great form in the Autumn Internationals, and Finn Russell at 10 are probably the 2 key players to give them a good chance. Going into it, this is what John Barclay, the Scottish captain, had to say about the team looking forward to this match against Wales this afternoon.
They've asked me to put like a little bit on individuals and what I perceive to be their strengths and weaknesses, but I'm playing a pretty successful team at the moment, so there's not that many weaknesses, I don't think, and the guys are coming into the Welsh team with a lot of confidence. So, I guess to answer your question is I've been used a little bit, and some of the guys have asked me a little, odd little question here and there on traits, I guess, or habits on the pitch.
We haven't really talked about it in terms of, when we've won and when we haven't and things like that. We've just kind of really worked hard on looking at our game and looking at Wales and making sure we've had really good preparation. So, we've had some good results in the Autumn. We had a good result in Australia, in Sydney, not too long ago, where we hadn't ever won there. And so, to go down there and get a result, we're going to have to defend really well. We're going to have to attack well. We're going to defend really well. And we're capable of doing that. with the right mindset, and so we've really focused on that.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
So we're building up for the forthcoming RBS Six Nations. That gets underway very, very shortly. Our man Chris McCarty's down there in the 22, building up to that one. Early kickoff in the RBS Six Nations, Mark Archer is?
It's taking part in about an hour's time in Cardiff. It's Wales at home to Scotland. Late kickoff this evening's in Paris, 8:45. France, of course, hosting Ireland. And then tomorrow, 7 p.m, come on down to Brasti. It's taking place in Rome, Italy. Will face England, back-to-back winners of the championship.
Man City lead Burnley by 1-0 in the early kickoff in the Premier League. That one's live here on the big screen, so do come down and watch that one. You've got Manchester United against Huddersfield Town as our live game. You've got live coverage of that one from 7 o'clock here. Killy against Celtic, it's 0-0 in that one, half-time in the early in the Scottish Premiership, but there have been goals aplenty over in Spain. In fact, Ibar have just extended their lead by another. They lead Sevilla by 4-2-1. So we'll have details on all the goal scorers for you, that one, in just a few moments' time. We're going to get more details from the 22, from the activities down here at Barasti in just a little while. We were talking Ironman earlier on in proceedings, but Mark Archer, we're going to talk all things triathlon now. Are you, dare I ask, are you in training for next month or not?
I told you earlier, Tom, during the Ironman, I did a triathlon, my first and only triathlon, about 30 years ago. I think I was 16 at the time. So, no, it's great. It's, you know, we've seen the rise of many sports in the UAE in the last decade: cycling, running, swimming, and no better way than to combine them all, and you have the perfect race. So, triathlon, Ironman, multi-discipline sports, been a massive growth area in the UAE and Dubai in recent years, and none other bigger than the event in Abu Dhabi in a couple of weeks' time, the ITU World Series event taking place in the UAE capital.
Second and third of March down in Abu Dhabi in the nation's capital. One man who's been there, done that, and now talks about it from the rooftops around the world as well, of course, competing at the highest level, is professional triathlete and a competitor on the International Triathlon Union Circuit. It is Omar Noor, joins us live from our broadcast position. Also, a Demand Health Active Life Ambassador. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, guys. It's good to be back.
Nice to have you on board. what is it? What is it? 2nd of February today? So we're literally a calendar month away from the ITU World Triathlon Abu Dhabi. We've talked about the growth of Ironman competition here. Is triathlon growing as well?
Triathlon, look, Ironman is a distance, a brand of triathlon, right? And I think the whole sport, if you look at the past 5 years since I've been hanging around here and doing triathlon around the region, it is blown up, and you can all see it. It's not just about elite athletes. It's not just about the biggest competitor. It's about everybody. It literally is about everybody. And when you go out there and watch these, it's unbelievable. And a lot of it, I mean, look, I'm quite impressed with what the Sports Council, Abu Dhabi Sports Council, has done down there with the WTS, opening it up, being completely inclusive. So it's not just about the kids being there, the adults being there. It's like a family festival feeling. But they're also doing the Paralympics this year. They're doing the Special Olympics. So it's an all-inclusive event. And it's pretty unique, right? I mean, Ironman is fantastic. They bring some big names here, but the ITU racing, it's just the nature of the beast is completely different. It's a high intensity, high pace. You see, it's multiple loops, right? So you see the athletes come through several times. So it's more spectator friendly. It's geared towards spectators, and obviously the fact that the bike is draft legal changes the game completely. It makes it a truly one of these things where you're sitting at the edge of your seat. You know, who can forget, for example, last year's finish with Andra Hewitt and Jody Stimson? And we're talking, I mean, I almost cried there. This was, you know, I got, my hair was, you know.
That was an emotional story as well for a lot of reasons.
Absolutely. It was a very emotional story, obviously, with Andra Hewitt and the loss of her fiance. And she hadn't really been at the highest level for a while. And this was her return. Her big return was Abu Dhabi, the first, WTS ITU race of the season. And she ends up in a sprint finish where they, you know, it's like a movie. They're exchanging. They're literally, I'm like, who are you? Did somebody write a script? Because it's like one person goes ahead, the other goes ahead. And I'm like, it was an emotional mess.
Amazing venue. For many years, the Abu Dhabi Triathlon or the old International Triathlon was held in the Corniche, and they swam there, and there was a circuit there. It was a long form event, and then there was different versions of that. But last year they switched to Yas Marina Circuit. So it's a real chance for a lot of people to get involved in an amazing venue for a start, home of the Formula One in Abu Dhabi. But it's a pretty cool place to go and have a race, isn't it, Omar?
One of my favorite places in the world to race, actually. It really is. My favorite memories. It's the only place in the world where you get to race on a Formula One track, right? So it's quite exciting. The whole idea is exciting. To get involved in that, and look, a lot of people say, but I can't do the whole thing, you know? And I say, guys, relay, right? Relay. Have one person swim, one person bike, one person run, and you get to do this right on Yas Marina Circuit, right on, and you get to feel the experience. You will catch the bug, and you will not be able to stop. You'll slowly keep on upping the ante.
So that's something that people don't understand fully, is it?
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to do the individual race. You can also do a team race.
Exactly. And because the idea is, when you say triathlon, it's daunting. People are like, this is not for me. I'm not even, guys, I don't do that. No, you can actually break it down into the individual things. And if you do the shortest distance, it's quite manageable. Most people can do it.
You'll be pleased to know we actually put a team in last year,
oh.
The Dubai Ice Sports team.
And
Chris McCarty was the expert cyclist, and he's already started tapering his training off
for
this year's race.
I wish.
But you know what happened, Omar? He had a bike, and he used the bike for the first time. He's still trying to figure out 1 year later how to change the gears on that bike.
I got you.
I am still wondering that, because the bike was stolen, Arch. So as we well know, the bike was stolen from
Chris,
my place.
Chris, how tall
of
are you?
I am 6'5".
Excellent. We're almost the same height. My bike is your bike. Please,
perfect.
I'll have you.
He needs a beginner's guide. He needs to take off the trainer wheels.
I'll take care of it. I'll show you how to shift gears. We'll be good.
Shifting gears is the problem. Thankfully, I know how to ride a bike. It's just the shifting gears I've problems
with. I got you.
I just love the idea, the image of somebody riding around Dubai in a single gear bike.
I did that, by the way. 20K in the one gear.
Exactly.
Almost killed me, so it did.
But you did get involved.
We did, yeah.
You did take part. And I'm going to get more from Chris in a moment, but from your perspective, Aaron, you've done the circuit, you've competed internationally, you've competed around the globe. How does the circuit and the setup here compare to others?
It's incredible, right? I mean, first of all, you have to understand that the ITU, there's different levels of ITU, and this is the highest stage. This is the biggest. This is as good as it gets.
This is the Olympic athletes coming as part of the annual series,
it's
right?
It's the creme de la creme, right? So first of all, I highly encourage you, even if you're not going to race, come watch, because it's unbelievable. And I can say this, I think, now. It's been announced that the Brownlee brothers are coming. So that's the first time you get both Brownlee brothers racing in Abu Dhabi. So that's going to be some exciting. It is the highest stage. And then the setup. So forget now the fact that it brings the best athletes, that it's this crazy, fast-paced type of racing with the best of the best in the world. But forgetting that. The venue itself, even if you're just going to simply go and do the thing, it's breathtaking, and the organization is fantastic. And you've seen it grow year after year, and that's, I must commend the Sports Council on that.
We're going to have more from Omar in just a few moments time. If you're interested to get involved in all things triathlon here in the region, there ain't many better starts than the ITU World Triathlon down in Abu Dhabi. We'll talk elite level. We're also going to be talking about the amateur athletes and the tiny triathletes as well, who are all being catered for down in Abu Dhabi a month from today. Is that enough time for you to get your training regime into space? Well, and into place, we will find out after these.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Tell you what, if I see another kid putting up a piece of cardboard with a piece of paper and a sellotape to the front saying, can I have your jersey, please, at another football game, I'm going to go a little bit crazy, because it seems to become the trend of 2018, Chris McCarthy.
It has indeed become the trend, and it's, I've always been, you want to, or at least if I was a professional football player, you'd look for the most unassuming kid, right? A kid that perhaps maybe shouted some level of encouragement to you. It all just seems, it's the way the world's going though, Tom. It's so in your face, social media, all the rest of it, it's just, it's... unedifying.
But it's weird. I mean, maybe I'm just being, maybe this is helicopter parenting, but make an effort as well. Oh. Sure, it's like the kids that go into the, you know, bringing their models in, and you bring in an absolute, you know, a life-size scale model of Vesuvius, which actually erupts and things
like
that.
Yeah, because their mum or father knows a friend that's actually an art sculptor that's done it for them.
The parents that have got involved, you know, and they spent days and nights working at these. These? Shoddy. Absolutely shoddy, these attempts.
At least there's something more endearing about a shoddy attempt than a all-singing, all-dancing volcano that actually spews live lava. real lava.
Listen, we are talking all things sport here on The Grill. We have got Mark Archer alongside us at the moment. He's keeping an eye on build-up ahead of the Six Nations. Is it building up?
It is building up indeed, and lots of questions, of course. Six Nations action gets underway in just over half an hour now. In Cardiff, the first match, Wales at home to Scotland. Big questions being asked, Tom. Can Scotland mount a title charge? Will England win three consecutive titles? Will Ireland, of course, deny Eddie Jones' side at Twickenham on course March 17th on St. Paddy's Day? Wales, well, everyone's calling them Scarlets because there's 10 players playing. Will they win a first title since 2013? And what will Italy come up with, poor old Italy come up with tomorrow when they take on Eddie Jones' England? Well, plenty of questions. The answers will start coming in thick and fast from 6:15.
We'll have more build-up for you on that one just after 6 o'clock. Chris McCarty's just been practising his passing skills down in the 22.
And they're not great either, let me tell you. Area 22.
It's Arizona, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It's where the aliens live.
That's what we cannot talk about.
It's not Roswell. That far away from the truth, actually. We've seen a couple of those exiles, lads.
I hope they're not listening, Tom. They'll be after you. Area 22 down here at Barasti. Essentially what it is, it's a passing challenge. You pop on down, you purchase some of Ireland's finest black stuff, and you get a chance to give it a go. And if you are at the top of the leaderboard come the end of the day, you automatically make it into the grand final on February 24th. That grand final will include a number of other activities. You come out on top then, and it does seem all very convoluted, but it is pretty straightforward, let me tell you. If you come out on top then you've got an all-expenses-paid trip. We'll pay the flights, we'll pay accommodation, we'll give you four match day tickets to England-Ireland at Twickenham on St. Paddy's weekend. It is, as I said earlier, money can purchase that prize, but it would just cost you an arm and a leg. You can do it all for free. Just pop on down here.
Money can buy anything these days, can't it? Even success in the Premier League. Paul Espy's alongside us, is Liverpool fan. Surely, given what you've done in the transfer market over the last couple of weeks, Tottenham Hotspur is going to be a walk in the park tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, please don't say that. What is it? We beat City, and then the next match we go and lose to Swansea, so please don't count your chickens on this one. I think we're going to have a decent result. I think the transfer window was okay for us. I mean, Van Dijk is what we needed, but then when you see what Arsenal have gone and done, I'm a little bit more sceptical, let's just say that.
We'll leave it at that. Chris McCarty's keeping an eye on the football for us. Back underway in the Premier League. No changes there, just that one goal that separated the two. No goals up in Scotland. Kilmarnock Celtic into the second half there, just got underway. Still 0-0 in that one. Comes at something of a surprise to many. Let's go to Spain, though, where there have been plenty of goals, 9 minutes remaining.
Yeah, goals raining in the early kickoff in La Liga, where I can tell you it's now Eibar 5, Sevilla 1. This is an absolute rout from a Sevilla side that, let's not forget, are in UEFA Champions League action in the next fortnight. They will be taking on Manchester United in that last 16 tie, and they've been absolutely battered today. Goals from Kike, Fabian Orellana, he's got two, Ivan Ramis, and just a few short moments ago it was Anits Arbila on the score sheet for Eibar. 5-1. That is, without question, their biggest win of the season thus far for Sevilla. Oi, oi, oi. Not a time to be using the word crisis ahead of that game against Manchester United.
Crisis, what crisis? Let us now turn our attention back to our live guest, international triathlete, a man who's competed on the international circuit for plenty a season and ambassador of the Demand Health Active Life Programme here in the region. Omar is alongside us. Just before we went to that break, I was asking about that 4 weeks. Is 4 weeks enough to get oneself ready? Maybe not for an international elite triathlon, but if you wanted to compete in one of the other events?
Yeah, you know, it depends on I think the shape that you started in, but I think most people that are reasonably healthy could partake, certainly in the relay. I think it's not, a month is plenty of time. It's a matter of just going out there and getting started, you know. My thing is this: you got to sign up. Right, because if you don't sign up, you're not gonna practice for the month and then sign up, right? So you got to go. You're gonna sign up. You got to put your money, and then all of a sudden you find the motivation to get up and start doing it.
Omar, what are the distances again? I know there's three different versions, aren't there? And I think the shortest version, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the sprint element.
Absolutely.
So if you're looking to beginner, if you're a bit of a novice, you've got some fitness and you've got a month now to do a bit more swimming and a bit more cycling and some running.
Yeah.
What sort of distance are we looking at for the sprint of the ITU?
Sprint is 750 meters swim, 20K on the bike and 5K run. So, you know, 5K run, anybody can do that. You know, most people can at least walk a 5K run, right?
It's over 2 days as well, isn't it, the event, 2nd and 3rd of March. You've got the elite race. But 3,500 amateur athletes taking
which is awesome. Look, I mean, they've done some changes this year that I think are really, really cool. One of the things is they put the age groupers on the second day, on the 3rd. And on the first day, on the 2nd, they have all the elites racing. And your bike racking and your setting up and all of that stuff happens 5 minutes before the men's elite come on. Up to 5 minutes. So while you're there doing all of that stuff, boom, you pop in the stands, you watch yourself an amazing triathlon. So they really made it spectator friendly and people that are competing, and makes it easier for them to see. And then, you know, my favorite part, which I've always got involved in, is the kids stuff is also happening on that Friday, right? Like in the morning. That's awesome.
You talked about earlier about how it's cool if you're just a sports fan or wanting something to do on the weekend. It is quite cool the way they've set this up. I was lucky enough, I went out to Beijing for the Olympics, and the first event I actually went to of the week I was there was the triathlon. I thought, it's really boring. You see them do the swim. They'll disappear off and do a cycle, and you'll see them, you know, an hour later, and then they'll do the run, they'll disappear and come back.
Yeah.
But the way it's set up with doing the laps is you get to really monitor who's doing what each lap, who's making ground, whether the strong swimmers get off out of the water first, and then the cyclists start to catch them up, and then you see the guys, you know, the runners make their ground. It is pretty cool to actually go watch it. You know, if you're not participating, it's probably the best thing you can do is go down and watch.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the biggest difference, actually, that I've seen over the past 5 years, like, and I'm proud to be a small part of this, you know, alongside with the Mons Active Life, is the growth of the sport, not just in more participants, but people understanding it more. In the beginning, when somebody didn't know anything, you just say triathlon, they're like Ironman, and they don't really know the distances, they don't understand. This is mega strategic. The ITU, you get people resting, you got people doing more work than other people. Some of it is up here. It's not simply the fastest person of the day wins, okay? That can happen, right, with some, you know, having the brownies around and whatnot. But some of it is strategy. So seeing that, having them pass over and over and over and following it on the Jumbotron so you can see what's going on at the lead, and then you see them actually physically passing over, it makes it exciting. It makes it something that's, like, worth going to, you know.
And who else are the big name international stars of triathlon? Who else can the people come down and watch? You know, these are world-class Olympic athletes doing their best. Who are the guys?
Well,
who are your tips? Who are your tips to look out for?
Well, it's coming. I mean, they're announcing the start list in a week, so I don't even know who is in that bag of secrets. But the ones that we do know are the Brownlee brothers, which is awesome on the men's side. Andrea Hewitt on the women's side, and to me, you know what? That's good enough. If you have these big names, and with what Andrea did last year, you got to come and check it out.
It's interesting as well that this is an event that kicks off the World Series, the ITU World Triathlon Series. They go from here to Bermuda, then Yokohama, a couple of events over in the UK during the summer, Nottingham and Leeds, then Hamburg, Edmonton, Montreal over in Canada, and then finish up in Gold Coast in September at the end of the year. Is that significant, the fact the ITU chooses to kick off a season here?
Yeah, it's very significant. I mean, the fact that it's an early race, you know, also makes things very different for athletes, because you get some athletes that you know have an early off season, and in the beginning people weren't really ready to go in March. Like, people didn't, the season wasn't that vast, and now you get athletes that are literally, they get a very short off season, and their athletes have catered their schedules to make sure that they come and do this first race, right? Because they love the venue. The venue for as a professional, as an elite athlete, is fantastic, because what you have is you have a lot of venues out there that are on the bike are simply, lack of better terms, boring, right? And what I mean by that is it's a circle, or you just go straight out and back. It's not, there's not that many turns. It's not that technical. Here, you're on a Formula One track, so a lot of the there's a lot of turns. There's a lot of action. So if you're the type of athlete that for example, is good on the bike and wants to make a difference, it keeps everything honest. It really level, you know, it really, you have to work to win here. In a lot of places, you just swim really hard, you hang on the bike, and then you run really hard, and boom, you got yourself a title. That won't happen in Abu Dhabi.
From an elite's point of view, obviously, you've got packed schedule for the World Series, and I suppose calendar-wise, it's going to be a busy one. You've got Commonwealth Games coming up, so a number of the athletes are going to be involved in that. Are there other sort of franchise events as well, as we're seeing in other sports at the moment, or is the main focus on the ITU-sanctioned ones, or are there other events you can compete in?
Well, so what you usually have is this. You have different types of athletes, and if you're an ITU athlete, the biggest goal, like the where everybody wants to go, is the Olympic Games. Everything gears up to that. But then you also have the major games, such as the Commonwealth Games. That's a major focus, right? And a lot of athletes will be coming to WTS Abu Dhabi because they want to qualify for the Commonwealth Games, and it's a point system, so you have to do that. Once you're in that system, that is your number one priority. I mean, you get still, some athletes will do some non-draft races to train, to practice, just to get fit, to get ready for the... But usually an ITU athlete will focus on these races. But then you get the likes of, you know, Alistair, who now is... You don't know, right? Is he going to do another Olympic cycle? He's definitely... He's going to race, so he's going to be here. So he's clearly going for a Commonwealth. But at the same time, while he's at it, he just quickly... came for a quick title in Dubai Ironman 70.3, right? And it's, but not every athlete can sort of toggle like that.
I suppose one question to bring you into the conversation as well, Arch, from a sort of organization point of view, and I know that you've been involved in events like this in the past as well. It's just interesting when you're reading the build-up to this, and in the press releases, you know, there's lines like, for those traveling from overseas, series of travel packages are now available. Is this a new sort of element of tourism into a country? Can you have triathlon tourism?
Yeah, very much so. It's mass participation sports tourism. I think last year's numbers, off the top of my head, were almost 1,000 international athletes travelled into Abu Dhabi and the UAE to participate. So you do the economic impact numbers. It's heads and beds and bums and beds. So it's like people flying in, either be regional or it's pretty cold in Birmingham or Leeds this time of year or in Scandinavia. So guys want to come and compete, maybe have a week's training. You know, we've seen Omar here for a number of years because the weather's good. He can train here. The facilities are good. So we see a lot of athletes, not necessarily at the elite level, but guys that do spend a lot of time, you know, as triathletes wanting to be competitive. So it's a great economic impact. Again, hotels will fall. You know, the airlines will be packed out for that weekend. They'll be out in the restaurants. They'll be spending money. So it's a great economic...
There'll be a run on grilled chicken as well, won't there?
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of grilled chicken consumed.
Exactly. So it's you know, mass participation events like the ITU event now are a very key part of sort of a sports tourism strategy. You know, the big numbers that gets... What's great about triathlon is it gets to showcase a city as well, and a sporting asset like Yas Marina Circuit. Previously, when it was in the Corniche, it showcased, you know, a beautiful part of Abu Dhabi as well. But, you know, so it does that with the TV coverage for the race is global. This race will be globally televised live, and also in the highlights package. Again, then people coming in and participating really just gets the coffers going nicely.
The message from Omar earlier was sign up, and I suppose that's the message you want to get across to people. Forget if you're elite or not, get involved.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, and people can still sign up, and all they got to do is go online, go to abudhabi.triathlon.org, and sign up and pick up. Look, my favorite thing is this, and this is my biggest tip. Go find two people. If you're like scared right now, you're listening to me, it's like, oh, sounds enticing. It's too soon. I'll do it next year. No, there's no next year. Sign up now. But the best thing to do is go and find a couple friends and sign up as a relay, because then all of a sudden you're relying on each other. It's a lot more fun. It's social. And you will encourage each other to make it to that start line.
Good job. We've got Tom Urquhart, we've got Paul Espy, and we've got Chris Picardi.
There we go.
It's a dream team.
I like how you...
Whoa.
I'm coach and management.
I'll
go and find a sponsor.
Just assume that as well. Listen, you can find out, as I said, as Emma was saying, on the website, it's abudhabi.triathlon.org. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the hashtag is WTS Abu Dhabi as well. Promises to be a cracker. And even if you don't want to strap on and get into your Leica and strap on your trainers, get down and enjoy the fun. It's family friendly entertainment in the village. Get up close and personal to the athletes themselves and get down to what promises to be a cracker of a weekend of entertainment in Abu Dhabi. Last question has to go to the man alongside me as well, because this is not a man who rests on his laurels. It's not a man who sits down on boxes for far too long without something being planned. 2018, what's on the horizon?
Oh, God, you know what? This is a really, I think some of your listeners may have heard about some of the rowing that, I've been doing and crossing the Atlantic. And we've had quite an adventurous crossing, Omar, Samra, and I, the O2 team. So I've given myself, you know what, after this rebirth on December 22nd, I'm giving myself like a month and a half to just sort of literally recoup. I feel really refreshed right now. I feel very, very happy to be alive. And we're sort of going to see. We'll see, you know, like I haven't made any decisions. And actually, it's funny you should mention this because I was just talking to my girlfriend yesterday and saying, listen, like there needs to be some soul searching going on now. And I need to make a decision quick because I'm the kind of person, the reason why I'm encouraging the listeners, like go out and sign up. I have to have a goal. If you want me to get lost in life, just let me float, you know, and I will get lost. So I need to have a goal. So Soon I will share something with you, Tom.
Thankfully, you didn't float for too long and get lost, and that's why you're alongside us here up at Barasti. And you will be down there in Abu Dhabi encouraging, as you always do, juniors, amateurs, and professional and elite athletes as always. Lovely to have you here. Bless you, my friend. If people want to find out more about you, if they want to watch that space as well, social media, that's the place to be.
Yeah, social media. Just if you literally put Omar Noor in Google, you'll find all my social media. There you go.
My friend, enjoy the rest of the evening. Nice to see you. Bless
you,
my
see you.
Great to see you.
Yeah,
we will, of course, be catching up with you ahead of the triathlon. The talking of catching up, we're going to be catching up with Chris McCarty in just a few moments' time. I can spy a few Ireland jerseys down there. That's coming up after this.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
Right, well, let's get down to the 22. That is, of course, the danger zone on a rugby field. And who better to send down there than our danger mouse himself, Chris McCarty.
Thank you very much, Tom. Yes, I'm down here at Area 22, and I've been joined by another man from Dubai Excels, because it will be no surprise to you, Tom, that Dubai Excels still top the way on the leaderboard. Delighted to be joined by Kieran Russell. Kieran, 6:40 is the score to beat. You boys are definitely going to win this, aren't you?
Well, nothing's certain in this world, as you know, but we're certainly holding the fort at the moment.
You certainly are, and I was watching you. You said off air as well, you're the star of the show for this Dubai Excels team.
Well, I mean, I like to remain as modest as I can, especially on public radio, but yeah, we can say that.
Yeah, okay, we can say that. We will say that. A fantastic victory for you boys yesterday as well over our good friend Henry Paul's side, Jebel Ali Dragons. The Dubai Excels this year, you're going to take some stopping.
We are indeed. We're very much dominating. We've got a great, we've got a really strong first team at the moment. Especially the performance yesterday. It was very important. Obviously, Jebel Ali top of the league. So it was very much a poignant point in our season, and we definitely took advantage of it.
Well, listen, I joked a little earlier with your comrades that you could very well be off to Twickenham on March 17th. You were just telling me off air, despite the accent, that you are a Scotland fan. Is that correct?
I am indeed. Went through the academy system growing up. It pains me to say it, but yes, indeed, I'm very much a Scotland fan.
And how optimistic are you of Scotland doing anything in this Six Nations? Gregor Townsend's come in there. He's doing a wonderful job. He's built from the job that Vern Cotter did. Do you think we've got a chance? Come on, give us some hope.
I'd love to say yes. So, yeah, why not?
Okay, that's the answer from down here. Area 22, it is open for the next half hour or so. It is the Dubai Excels boys, Tom, that lead the way. 640 points. That is the score to beat. A reminder again, passing challenge, 2 minutes. You've got to get as many points as you possibly can. Back to you, Tom.
Cheers, Chris, up the Excels. Big thanks to the Excels boys down there in the 22 at the moment. Right. Around about this time last week, Arch, myself and others were considering what was going to happen in the Australian Open final.
When you're in a match, you have to have three things integrated, and that's your head, your heart, and your guts. If only two are happening when you're playing, or one, you're not at your peak performance, and the champions do that better than anybody else.
Sensational.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Head, heart, and guts. Constantly. That's what makes greatness.
The Dane, Caroline Wozniacki, wins her very first Grand Slam.
He has done it. A sensational six for Federer down under.
extraordinary tournament down under, and so many talking points. Good to have Paul Espy with us here from CF Tennis, a man who you'll hear much more of in the coming weeks, the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Open just around the corner. Let's start with the Dame, Caroline Wozniacki, as Billie Jean called her there. Breakthrough moment for Caroline Wozniacki, somebody who's been knocking on the door for a long time?
Yeah, she's been knocking on the door for just far too long, really, and yeah, her game is... has always kind of lacked the weapons that everyone assumed that she wouldn't be able to take that slam. And she's been in two slam finals before, never really achieved that much out of it. But last year was such a fascinating season for her. I think she played in 8 finals, lost 7 of them, and won the biggest, which was the Masters Finals. So she did go into this as probably the form player, actually, and I think very much under the radar. Certainly Chris and I sort of argued over New Year over who we thought could win it. And when we saw Serena, how she was playing, first name from me was Wozniacki. I mean, for me, it was always going to be between Wozniacki and Halep. And what upsets me really at the moment is that the women's game right now is so exciting, but it's kind of still being overshadowed because of the two greatest guys who we're bound to go and talk about in a minute.
Talking about the women's game, I mean, and on that arch, is this a great opportunity for Wozniak to cash it, Wozniacki to cash in now and make 2018 a memorable year for her?
Well, as Paul said, she's been knocking on the door for a number of years, and she was almost like we talk about it in golf, the best player in the sport, in the women's sport, not to win a major or a slam. And it's very even, depending on the surface, depending on which player's just found form at the right time, particularly in the women's game. There, you could go into most of the slams, I think there's probably 3 or 4 names, depending if Serena's playing or not. if she's in there, then the game changes in terms of who you think's really going to be the standout player, even at her age and with her experience and the mile she's got, you know, on her legs. But in the women's game, Going into now, heading towards the clay court season and the next Grand Slam, it's tough to call. There's probably 4 or 5 names you can call out of the bag, and then it might be someone else that emerges and has a tournament week and gets to the final on that surface. So it is an interesting time in the women's game, and it's a fascinating time for the men as well.
We'll get to the men in a moment, but I just want, I mean, on the women's side of things, I just want to pick up on one thing. I suppose one thing that frustrates me is when you think that you're on top of what's happening in the women's game. And like, 2018 I thought was going to be a massive year for American female tennis players. I thought back ahead in 2017, looking at the rankings, looking at the form they're coming into, and what happens, going to the Australia, the first big slam of the year, and basically all of them are out in the first 2 rounds. Do you find that? You can't seem to call or predict the women's game at the moment.
And that should be something that makes it a little bit more appealing to everybody. And unfortunately, it just doesn't seem to be so at the moment because of what's going on in the men's game. But looking at the way that the ladies' tournament panned out, there were just so many incredible matches. You know, Kerber versus Halep, you know, immediately springs to mind as being just unbelievable. The grit and determination. Wozniacki against, I'm sorry, I can't remember the lady, but she had match points 5-1 down in the final set. You know, so many incredible matches, and like, I'm sure if Cilic had beaten Federer, then we would only really be talking about the ladies' game, because that's how good it really was. It was just an incredible tournament. I think the men's tournament was okay. Yes, it was fantastic for Federer, and he, you know, the milestone that he's reached, which we're going to talk about, I guess, but yeah, for me, that was the best female Grand Slam tournament that I've watched since the days of Henin playing against Serena.
It was a good final as well. 3 sets, come from behind victory. Halep had her opportunities as well. So it was a very well-matched final. And in some ways, you kind of feel, you know, the time was right for Wozniacki to come through and win that first Grand Slam.
Well, probably, yeah. But then you could say the same about Halep, really, couldn't you? Because, I mean, she's... For me, I don't want to be rude about the lady, but, you know, she's kind of like one of those dogs nipping at your heels. She always just makes you play another ball and another ball, and she's such a fighter, and she's going to win a slam. She will, if she doesn't win the French, I'll be amazed, in fact. But my goodness, I'm more excited about the ladies' game now than I am about the men's, and that says a lot for me because I've obviously been so positive about the men's game.
We will talk a certain Roger Federer and his achievements down in Melbourne in the third and final hour of the show, which is coming up your way in just a few moments' time. Do stay tuned to Dubai i103.8. Third and final hour of the show coming, including, of course, our build-up to the Six Nations and live coverage of the Premier League.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.